The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.
Welcome to The Investing Show, where we discuss ideas to help you make more of your money. I'm Simon Lambert of This Is Money. Joining me on the show today, I've got Tom Beckett of Sigma Investment Management.
Thanks, Simon.
And Richard Hunter of Interactive Investor.
Hi, Simon.
Now, Tom, you've been a regular guest on the show over the years, and over that time, lots has changed, but hardly anything seems to have changed as well. We've seen an interesting year for investors. We've seen a change in interest rate expectations. Mm-hmm. We've got the escalation of Donald Trump's trade war. We've got problems in Iran that we're talking about at the moment. We've been going around in circles over Brexit in this country, closer to home. What do you think has changed for investors over the past year, and do they need to think differently?
Well, thanks for having me back. I'm always surprised. I think what's changed is, if you think about the 2009 as a whole, I think if you'd have told me at the start of the year we're going to have all those issues you just mentioned, including a continuation of monetary poison being implemented in the global economy by the ECB in particular in Europe and potentially the Federal Reserve as well, and you'd have told me that benchmark indices like the US S&P 500 would be up 20% year to date, and markets like the UK, which is lagged but still up sort of 11-12% for the year, I'd have thought that you were mad and I was talking complete nonsense, which wouldn't be the first time. So, I mean, what's changed is actually I think the world has got worse, but markets have performed quite well. Now, that's not necessarily as big a non sequitur as people might expect, because really the preeminent driver behind financial markets this year has been the expectation that interest rates around the world are going to be loosened further to try and boost economic activity. And that's really meant that all assets around the world have looked more attractive because the reference interest rate's gone down, meaning the income you get from other investments has looked more attractive. And that's really what's been driving markets so far this year. It's frankly unsustainable, and I would argue that we've now got to the point with monetary policy in many countries around the world where you've crossed the Rubicon. It's gone from being a positive driver to now being a negative driver. But for now, it's been really a green light to go for investors, and 2019 so far has been excellent from making money perspective.
We say we wouldn't necessarily have expected this at the start of the year, but also that this effect has probably not got that much further to run. Is there the potential opportunity for things to continue to go well for another couple of years before they turn sour? Or are you thinking that it's better to be more cautious in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, never say never. And let's also remember that the reaction we've seen in markets this year has not only been driven by central bankers, but also been driven by the fact that at the end of last year there was a major market sell-off, which I think led markets to be oversold and offer a short-term market opportunity. Now, that's been extrapolated out further because of the help of the central bankers. But I think if you sit here right now and think about the world fundamentally from an economic perspective and from the perspective of equity markets, are companies going to make really good profits in the next few years? I think you need to have a healthy dollop of skepticism. From an economic perspective, I don't think it's disastrous, but my view for a long time has been the world was going to glide down from perhaps a 4% annualized rate in real terms a decade ago down towards around 2.5% where we are now. And that prophecy, for once, has come true. We are now seeing that. Yes, we saw a move higher in economic growth rates as the Trump tax cuts came into play and some of the effects of the Chinese credit stimulus helped the economy the last couple of years. But broadly, that glide path hasn't changed. So I think that economic output in the future will grow more slowly. When you then take that into the views of what you should do with your portfolios and think about equity markets, well, if economic growth is not going to be as big a tailwind for companies to grow their profits, then you would expect equity returns to also be lower. Now, for some time, that's been massaged and helped higher, and so everyone's been helped higher by the central bankers helping that conundrum, but broadly that can only go on for some time. So never say never about markets carrying on to perform well for the next couple of years. But if you had to ask me, in all honesty, do I think we've seen the best of the returns to 2019 and the best of the returns this economic cycle and market cycle, I would say absolutely.
Richard, we regularly talk about US company earnings on here. You keep a keen eye on that for us. And I think one of the things that can be drawn out of that is that each time we've talked about them every quarter, it's generally been that they've held up pretty well. But it's often been that they've held up pretty well perhaps against some expectations. And that feeds through into what Tom was saying about this expectation that, you know, are companies going to be able to continue to grow their profits? Are people going to continue to have more money to spend? Or is that sort of Goldilocks effect going to come to an end soon?
Yeah, I mean, inevitably in the world's largest economy, at any given time, there's a number of moving parts. In terms of US corporates, which have tended to overshoot expectations, strangely, technically, they're in an earnings recession over the last couple of quarters. So they have managed to beat benchmark expectations, but nonetheless not necessarily grow. That's obviously a warning flag. It's probably one of the reasons why the president is so publicly keen for the Fed to continue to cut. How much of a 25 basis point cut will have as an injection on the US economy is moot. On the other hand, of course, bull markets don't die of old age. They die because something's changed. And that rather, as we get further towards 2020, makes you question how much of the trade war with China is actually politically driven, because at November next year, of course, Trump will be looking for re-election, and wouldn't it be a wonderful boost to 2020 if he said, we've all sat down at a table, worked out a multi-year agreement between ourselves, no more nasty stuff, that the markets will get yet another fillip. So whereas in the good old days, politics and the markets tended to have a decent standoff and keep away from each other, unfortunately, as we've seen with the rise of populism over the last 3 years or so, that's no longer the case.
And one thing that could cause another headache is if the oil price continues to rise. We saw the attack in Saudi Arabia that's been blamed on the Iranians. We've seen the oil price go up off the back of that. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at a scenario now where oil prices might continue to rise, and that sucks a little bit more energy out of the money more money out of consumers' wallets, to be perfectly honest?
Yeah, quite possibly. And I think the end game, as well as the glide path down to lower rates of economic growth, in my mind, has always been an era of stagflation, and that broadly is very low or not growing global economy, as well as persistently sticky levels of inflation. And everyone says there's no inflation in the global economy. I mean, I think if you say that to my parents, they'd probably punch you square in the face, because everyone really is feeling inflation in the real world. It's just the government lies to you about the inflation rate. So I think inflation is probably already still there and more sticky than people are giving credit for. And the last thing the world really needs now, with all that's going on, is a rise in the oil price, because as you rightly point out, that will suck money out of wallets, it will crimp consumption, and it will mean that profitability at companies is even harder to achieve. And I think there is a decent chance that carries on. I think the situation in the Middle East is real. You can try and argue who you think are the biggest perpetrators of this situation, but I think the situation there is real. And I think it also just points to a world where the global political fabric is slowly unravelling after 3 decades of intense globalisation, which has been really positive for many of your viewers, many of our clients, and for all of us. As the world has got along and globalised and financial systems have become increasingly entrenched, it's been a great time to make money. And I think that's slowly unravelling. Certainly the Middle East is a point of conjecture around that. But I think also, if you think about the situation already referred to between the US and China, that's setting the precedent, really, I think, for a very difficult couple of decades between the two world's premier economies. And people have talked about there being some form of trade deal. And Richard rightly referred to Mr. Trump might want to pull a rabbit out of the hat pre the election and look, I've beaten up China, I've got a deal. But actually, the problem between these two nations and the world as a whole is it's morphed from trade to now being concerns over technology transfers, intellectual property theft, and more importantly, national security. And these are not things you get back in Pandora's box easily. So I think the Middle East is an issue, and I think certainly the trade war is an issue. And I think really that all just feeds into an era of deglobalization, rising nationalism, and as Richard pointed out, a huge amount more populism.
And just picking up on the oil point, of course, again, as the largest economy, the oil price is very important to Americans. By definition, if you go to the States, you can't walk anywhere unless you're in New York or one of the large cities. You've got to drive everywhere, let alone the summer driving season. So inflation there, exactly the same as in the UK, is measured in certain goods. In fact, the US inflation figure is called the Cold and Hungry Index. So it doesn't include things like heating and food, which is really where inflation comes from. So similarly, I think it's going to be an interesting, potentially interesting few weeks for oil as the Saudis decide how they're going to respond to what's happened, and also how long the outage is going to be.
And we talk about America, obviously, in so much detail because it is the world's largest economy. It also makes up more than 50% of the world's stock market. And it's led the way over recent years. Well, since the financial crisis, it's led the way in delivering returns, despite lots of points along the way where people have said, no, too expensive, going to fall from here. But if we don't have this rising tide that lifts all boats, and we can't rely on that, where do we go looking for returns, Tom?
Well, it's interesting as well, because the world markets have changed a lot in the last 10 years. And just to try and prove that I put some analysis behind my nonsense, we've gone from a situation where in the MSCI world in 2009 was represented by 47% in the US. That's now actually pushing on 65%. I think the current weighting is around 63.5%. That just shows you how well the US market has done. I think the US market in dollar terms has done about 300% in the last 10 years. When you compare that against other markets around the world, hey, it's done more than double. And I think the interesting thing that we can see from investor trends is that people are extrapolating what we've seen in the last 5 and 10 years into the future. So what are they doing? They're selling active managers, they're taking money away from DFMs, discretionary fund managers, they're taking money from anyone who has an active bias, and they're moving towards passive instruments. And I think that's a terrifying prospect. And why? Because basically it's all linked to the same trade. Effectively, bond markets have done well because the Federal Reserve and other central banks around the world have been lowering interest rates. Bond prices have gone up, bond yields have gone down. Linked to that, and going back to what I said earlier, you know, interest rates going down, equities have done well, particularly in the US, particularly growth strategies. You know, they've also done well, and it's all part of the same trade. But everyone's just extrapolating that out in the future. Effectively, most people have a dumbbell portfolio, okay? They have on one side, they have, it's going to be a low-growth environment. Let's buy high-quality growth shares because, frankly, there's not much growth, so you might as well. On the other side, well, I don't know about China, the trade war, the Iranians, the Saudis. I need to hold some government bonds. And their barbell portfolio is exactly the same trade. So I would take from your question and think about doing things as anti-passive as possible. And what does that mean? Looking towards markets that people hate. Japanese equities is an example. Certain emerging market equities. I mean, I think Europe is a complete clown show, but there are probably some pockets of value also in European equities. Hey, I quite like the UK market as well. I mean, I think you can make some money there as well. On the fixed interest side, avoid anything that looks like a benchmark and try and find some specific corporate credits and specific consumer-faced credits that I think you can make positive returns. If you do and follow the trade that's worked for the last 5 years, I think you're going to sit there in 5 years' time and find yourself in a very difficult situation if you're planning on increasing your spending at any point in the next 5 years.
Couldn't agree more on the UK side. I mean, we were talking last summer that institutional international investors were calling the UK market, i.e. the FTSE 100 initially, uninvestable.
That's a great term.
Particularly and almost solely because of Brexit, notwithstanding 75% of earnings are coming from overseas, any number of absolute world-quality stocks in there, usually stable cash generation, which leads to either share buybacks or a 4-4.5% dividend yield. And yes, the FTSE 100's had a pretty good year, so far up about 9% in the year to date, but that does little other than wipe out last year's losses. So the UK market, it's certainly very much unloved at the moment. And although arguably over the years we've been talking about don't just get tied up with home bias, perhaps it is a good time to start having a look rather nearer to home again.
And can solve some of your income problems at a time when, sure, you know, UK 10-year government bond yields, effectively lending money to the UK government for the next 10 years, you get a return of about 50 basis points. If your inflation rate's going to be 2 over the next 10 years on average per annum, it's 150 basis points of your money being taken every single year. I think no thank you would be my investment advice on that front.
Well, you can treble that rate you get from the government by just putting your money in an easy access savings account.
So I hear Matt give some advice on that afterwards.
Earlier this year, we had you on the show, we were talking about the UK then, and you said maybe the time when the lorries start queuing on the M20 down to Dover, that's the time to buy, the moment, yep, of peak uncertainty.
Yep.
You did express some concern because it might go a bit too close to your house. But
yeah, time to be ruined by the traffic.
But what we seem to have done over the course of that time is just delay the traffic jam. We've just postponed the traffic jam, but we are moving towards this crunch point, and, you know, either amazingly he does get a deal, mm-hmm, or we don't get a deal, or we then move into the whole general election scenario. But it's got to get mopped up fairly soon. And I guess it's a bit sort of cliche to say this, oh, well, things will bounce, there'll be this, mm-hmm, relief rally kind of thing. But genuinely, people are sitting on their hands, and you've got to think there is an element there. But then there is also that percentage chance that things could get even worse.
Yeah, and I think keep a very open mind about the whole situation. And I recognise that any views on the subject polarise people's opinion. But I am of the view that whatever happens now doesn't really matter. If we have a deal, great. If we don't have a deal, then I frankly think that all the country needs is some certainty to move on. And I think that at points like that, you have to just think about the bare investment facts in your face. It's very obvious that no one likes UK assets. It's very obvious within that that people can't stand anything linked to the UK domestic economy and in particular the consumer. And I would argue, and Richard might disagree with me, on a 10-year view, I think you can look at some of these companies and think actually they're quite attractive. You know, it's always been a case of if you can find something that everyone else uniformly hates, that's typically a good investment to buy for the long term. And what I'd rather have, you know, I think obviously I have a balanced portfolio, but I'd rather have some UK-focused companies in my portfolio as opposed to some extremely highly valued US technology companies. Yeah, absolutely I would, because I think long-term valuations will revert back towards the mean, and I think you can make some money from that. And I don't think that the UK is going to end up being some barren economic desert, whatever the outcome might be. All we really need is some certainty to move on and get an improvement in sentiment and confidence.
And just before we finish, I just wanted to ask you one last question. Moving over to the other side of the world, a side of the world that people will be watching come a few days' time, and you mentioned before Japan.
Yeah.
You mentioned Japan. You said still unloved. People still don't like it. It's still cheap. Does that investment case hold? Is that something that you guys are actively backing?
Yeah, and we actually increased our exposure to Japanese equities in August, which I probably wouldn't have mentioned, apart from the fact it's done quite well in the last few weeks. But, you know, that is an example of an investment where you take a different view to everyone else. People hate Japanese equities. People are underweight Japanese equities. They can find every reason not to own Japanese equities. Whereas on the flip side of that, they can find every reason to buy US technology shares. And I can understand that. And I can understand having some in a portfolio. But that being said, if you can find assets where they're cheap, where there is change, and when actually they're growing their profits, hey, why not have some in your portfolios and why not do something different to what everyone else is doing? I can see a good reason why things are going to look up for Japan in the next few years. I think actually looking at the Rugby World Cup, that might will give people a bit more confidence to look at Japan and visit Japan and various things like that. I can see a good reason why in a world of increasingly difficult investment opportunities, taking a different view, thinking differently to other investors and buying cheap markets like Japan could be a surefire way to success in the next 5 years.
Tom, thank you very much. That's all we've got time for. Richard,
thank you very much.
And thank you very much for watching. Join us next time on The Investing Show. Goodbye.
The Investing Show, brought to you in association with the Scottish Mortgage Investment Trust. For more information, please visit www.scottishmortgageit.com.